Over to you, Ronald. Thank you.
Colin, thank you for that introduction, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak once again this year. Background, just linking into Colin's introductory remarks there. We talked about Distant Plain last year, myself and a guy called Neil Stevens, and we confirmed its suitability for professional development. And our intent was to look at perhaps using some other war games, continue with that theme, professional development, with where we work in the Army Personnel Centre. That was our plan. But as we all know, no plan survives contact. And what ended up happening was, although Neil was able to run it, I got short trolled for a tour in Afghanistan. Every challenge, however, is an opportunity. And so I took a Distant Plain with me to Afghanistan. Now, I was only there for 3 months, and obviously the focus was on other things, apart from using commercial off-the-shelf war games. I worked as the deputy CJ35 in the future operations team with an HQ Resolute Support. So it's a 4-star headquarters, took over from headquarters ISAF, so it deals with the whole of the country. And as probably most of you are aware, there's an ongoing insurgency there. Yes, there's coalition troops still involved. In fact, we lost 8 coalition troops in my 3 months out there. But the bulk of the mission really is about train, advise, assist the Afghan security forces out there. We ran it, Neil back in the UK and myself out in Afghanistan. This is not DSTL level scientific analysis. All we did is a simple questionnaire. We got participants' views at the end of the activity once we ran it. And just some straightforward questions there. That first one there, how successful was the war game in giving you a better understanding of the conflict in Afghanistan? Just gives a score between 1 and 5. And the audience was very much the OF3 level in the military, OF3, so major down to captain type level, staff officers. Obviously very much wanted them to be thinking at a much higher level than then perhaps in their comfort zone, saying my training has designed me to be a company commander, you know, a subunit commander. No, you're a staff officer working at a much, much higher level. Hence why we're looking at the whole of Afghanistan. And also back in the UK, it involved MOD civil servants as well. So yeah, not people that are out there necessarily on operations, but people who are responsible for sending people on operations and teeing them up for promotion and so on in the Army Personnel Centre. And the feedback there from both those audience groups. And just a couple of points perhaps on the 4 responses that I've drawn out there about improving understanding is that first one we've got in there, raising awareness. And we talked about that earlier in the conference, the other important about trying to raise awareness. Someone felt it achieved that. Next one down there, made you start to think. Remember here I'm talking about professional development. We're wanting to get people to think about the profession. Understand the complexities. That third bullet down there, once again, getting people to start to understand. And then quite a wordy one at the fourth point there, but it's really the second sentence, the sentence down there, and towards the end, in fact, the last line there, second and third order effects of your actions and to the folly of failing to remain flexible as the game changes. So that whole bit about the importance of maintaining flexibility, not just producing your plan, linear approach, thank you very much, that's going to work. The second question to highlight here, and we asked this year, what's your most important takeaway, whatever your background might be. Top one there, that's someone that was serving out there at the time on my team out there. Very quickly, it's that credibility piece out there. After one game, I could see the connection there with Afghanistan. And in fact, I'll come on to that point a little bit further on, the next point to me. Second point down there, Once again, someone working out there, a distant plane, the way it's designed, you've got four factions, they've all got a clear end state, but the end states are different. However, there's overlapping requirements in terms to meet your end state. You have to have some form of cooperation with the other teams. However, what people picked up out there is the logic of coalition forces working alongside government forces. That was very much our mission out there. That's what we're there to do. However, the game brought out with different end states, that bit about allies, yeah, they might have different end states and how to approach them, and keeping that in mind. Understanding how your definition of winning can change. Some people are very confident, yeah, I'm doing the right approach here, I'm doing the same thing. But the effect it's having is diminishing, or people are reacting to that, and what I thought I was doing to win is not what I'm now having to do. I'm having to change again. Links in with re-evaluating the situation, again brought that out. And then the last point there, that was from when it was run back here in the UK, so people dragged out of their day jobs dealing with army personnel, being brought back to Afghanistan, thinking about perhaps more core business there. But from a military perspective, based on the time given, most useful at generating an interest in the field of wargaming. So that whole bit about people not necessarily exposed to wargaming, even though they're serving in the military. And the desire for more, longer playing time, better understanding of rules, would lead to an appreciation of the wider utility for the military. So that desire to get more into wargaming, use it more. Got up there, quick summary, reasons for success there. Subject area, Afghanistan. I had the game parked up next to my desk, and people come by and say, what's that box? What's that? What's that in there? I'll have a look at the back there. Oh, that's interesting. I haven't come across this. Where did this come from? And so on. And, you know, the fact the subject matter was relevant to people out there, it definitely had a link in. People back in the UK, a lot of them had served out in Afghanistan. They maybe served down at a much, much lower level. Platoon commander, company commander, something like that. And suddenly they were looking at the whole conflict and they thought, wow, I was just one tiny element of that one beige block down there. There was a much, much wider picture going on out there. Interesting, the conversation with David at the front there, got pushback with using distant plane, which perhaps we can get into discussion. Certainly we found there was no pushback. It was one of the reasons for success. It was perceived as current, useful, credible. Going on to the credible bit there, the whole bit about having a professional product, and I talked about people picking up the box, that whole bit about marketing, it wasn't something I just cobbled together, produced myself, but it had that whole professional feel to it. And also the knowledge of research. I know Brian's not here, but between him and Volker, it's very clear when people started to look at it, that these were knowledgeable people. They weren't just game designers, you know, who were just producing something very simplistic, and they had real knowledge and research behind this, and of course Volker's background working as a CIA analyst and so on. That gave a lot of credibility to the game, and people quickly picked up, thought, these people really know a lot about their subject, I'm interested in learning more through the game. Mentoring, easy to mentor, or easier to mentor with a proven product that we used before, but also that whole bit because it's caught. There's lots and lots of access to support information out there, even being able to get hold of Brian on at the end of social media for a quick question answer because it's got that wide availability. And the continued product development, some of you may or may not be aware, but you know, there's been refinements to a distant plane, things like the solo rules, the bots that are used there. So that's what I sort of swept up as reasons for success. I just want to mention, in terms of the COTS piece, how I've also managed to use them earlier in the year, before I deployed. I do battlefield studies as part of professional military development. I ran one in the early part of the year. We did Waterloo, we did Ypres, and we did Dunkirk, because we wanted to have that arc of how things have remained the same, the nature of warfare, and how things have changed the character of warfare. And rather than just giving people a nice, thoroughly riveting lecture, before we went out there, I thought I might as well try and use some war games to give them a bit of background. Two really quite simple, straightforward war games. First from the W1815 on Waterloo. Very small, compact, not too many rules. Very strong narrative. It's all about playing cards. And those cards follow the narrative of the battle. So it starts to introduce people to the narrative as to what you're going to talk about out on the ground. And quick and replayable, we certainly played it in an afternoon three times, people swapping sides saying, well, that didn't work, how can this work? And when we were out on the ground at Waterloo, you're able to take people back to, do you remember when you did that on the W1850? Oh yeah, I get that, yeah, I can see that on the ground now. It just helped with their understanding, with their professional development. Flanders Field, perhaps even more simplistic, simple and compact, I took it on the ferry. Rather than people just sitting having a beer for beer's sake, we could sit and have a beer and sit round and use that war game. Really works as teams, splitting people into groups, into teams. You have four teams there. Each one was a battalion, four battalions, of course, being in a British brigade for most of the First World War. And it's all about getting to your objective first. And I did. I played the narrative pretty hard about the chain of command, the brigade commander and above saying, you need to get to your objective now, soonest. If you, you know, don't have that moral courage to get on and do that, you know, stand by, you'll be relieved and someone else will take your place. So putting the players under pressure. And of course, the whole point is to achieve success, A, you need to use the cards to use combined arms effects. But you've got all that option. You can push on further if you're willing to accept casualties. And you had some people at the beginning saying, not willing to accept casualties, it's a terrible thing to do to start with. But of course, as time goes on, they say, yeah, I'm willing to sacrifice another platoon to push forward. And then when you're out on the ground, standing in the Commonwealth Cemetery, they say, do you remember the decisions that you were making just with your little meeples and so on? That's what it equates to on the ground. But it allowed people to contextualise why the commanders were perhaps making decisions the way they did at the time. So a couple of conclusions, and also as we're going to have a plenary after, I thought I'd put a couple of points down for potential discussion as we're about connections and sharing information. In terms of a couple of conclusions that I drew there, clear utility for professional development. Very glad to hear that Matt Caffrey has also written that in his book as well, that the military should be using personal development through the wargaming. And that whole bit about professional finished product with support. I love the idea of being able to construct your own war games, produce your own components, but all of that takes time and to play test it as well. And when we've got a busy day job, it's great to be able to pull something off the shelf, everything's there, I've just got to get into the game, and I know it's been delivered to other people, I can get on and deliver it. The wide variety of stuff, games, that's out there. We can go from the strategic to the tactical. We're talking down the tactical battle group and so on with the last presentation. And to some extent, in the military, it's perhaps easier for us to exercise at the tactical level. You can take perhaps a company's worth of soldiers, put them through an exercise environment, get them cold, wet, tired, hungry, have a live enemy against them. When you start to go up the scales and the levels, we were talking about core level wargaming with the ARC earlier, then it becomes more difficult, but wargaming perhaps a method of being able to do that and introduce staff officers to that level of warfare. And of course, I've got the bit there, historical all the way to future. Broadens understanding and deepens thinking. And perhaps this comes on to Dr. Nussbacher's bit about the non-linear approach. It's quite easy for in the military to want to use wargames to confirm the processes that we have. Say we want to test, be it seven questions, the staff processes are all written down there. And there's utility in that. But the comment that was made by my Norwegian colleague about students being quite clever before they arrived at officer training and then being subjected to process and discipline and so on, and perhaps losing that element to think outside the box. Well, arguably, taking a COTS war game, which is outside of the comfort zone of a military officer, either at a much higher level, or a different kind of conflict, or going back in history or something, then there's that bit about, don't worry about the processes you've been taught, just play the game. Come up with your own planning, your own way of problem solving, and a bit more freedom of thought there as well. And then lastly, just those points there, are we doing enough to exploit COTS war games? Developing the war game mainstream? Certainly in the military, most people don't know about war games, about COTS war games, and they're quite surprised to see them. And the more that I think we can get out there and play them and expose people to them at all levels, at all ranks, then the more that war game truly becomes mainstream in the military. I don't believe we're there yet, in my view. Cots War Game designers slash companies representation. Do we have enough here? Should we have more? Should we have more of the manual Cots War Games folks involved or not? Don't know. Defence professionals working with war games designers companies, then that's the flip side, the other way to that. Should we be doing more with that? You know, the end state is almost, do you end up with a sweet spot, this balance, where you have, you know, a commercial war game company that's able to produce something which is used by the military, and of course if the military is buying placing an order for a number of them, that helps the war games company that's saying as used by the British Army or whatever it might be. Anyway, just some questions for thought for discussion. Thank you.